Hi, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Good to have you here with us. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballengee. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at the handle Golf News Net. We're presented by BetDSI.com, and you can download the new GNN Radio app on the Apple App Store as well on Google Play. Just search GNN Radio and you'll find us. You'll listen to all of our podcasts first, so you'll hit them as soon as they're uploaded to our massive servers. And you can hear not only this podcast, but also Jay's plays from our architecture and otherwise travel expert, Jay Flemma, as well, Gear Effects, which is our occasional golf business equipment travel podcast, which we're reviving. We just actually recorded a new episode before we did this one, about 20 minutes on the sale or potential sale of TaylorMade from Adidas Golf, as well, the Adams and Ashworth brands. So that's available on iTunes as well. It's also linked on our website, golfnewsnet.com. I hate to continue to harp on Olympic golf, but there are three things that kind of came out of this this topic, this emerging and seemingly really annoying topic of how terrible Olympic golf is this week. And the first came on Wednesday. Actually, both came on Wednesday, now that I'm thinking about it. One actually technically came on Thursday. So the first is on Wednesday, and that is Rory McIlroy, who's going to represent Ireland in the Olympic golf tournament. And he was speaking at the Wells Fargo Championship, where he's the defending champion. And he expressed some concern that golf was only going to get one opportunity, or rather two opportunities, to be a part of the Olympic program. Because when the IOC approved golf's return to the sport, was it 4 years ago, they said that that approval came with a right to be on the Olympic program in 2016 and 2020. So we've got it in Brazil this August, and we've got it in 4 years' time in Tokyo. And then with that approval came the caveat that in 2017, the International Olympic Committee votes on what sticks in the program. So when they add sports, they kind of give them a certain trial period, you know, two, three Olympics to do it. And they will vote based on what happens in 2016, in 2017, on whether or not to keep golf in the Olympic program. And McIlroy suggested that because so many players have bowed out on the men's side for varying reasons, either because of the difficulty of the schedule, because golf has not kind of put a pause on its schedule for the Olympics, but really just played with Play-Doh to try and move everything around so that they could still have all of the normal tournaments and the Olympics. He's worried that so many players will drop out and continue to drop out that it'll make the sport look bad. It'll make it look like golf, especially on the men's side, is not interested in Olympic golf. Here's what he said. It's obvious being played. It's obviously being played in Rio this year, and it's being played in Tokyo in 2020. I'm not sure if we're going to have another opportunity to win a gold medal after that, depending on what happens. He added, if we don't somehow change the narrative of people get more excited about it, I'm worried. End quote. I think he's got a point here, obviously. And part of that is what happened Wednesday evening here in the United States, but Thursday in Australia, when yet another Australian, Mark Leishman, announced that he was removing himself from consideration for playing in the Olympic men's golf tournament. And he gave a very good reason, and it makes a whole lot of sense. His wife, Audrey, if you don't know, last April, nearly died from toxic shock syndrome. And she was given between a 5 and 10% chance to live at her worst, but she has recovered and is continuing to recover from that illness, from that condition. And because of concerns over Zika virus and that it only takes a mosquito bite to transmit that disease from a mosquito to a human, Mark Leishman is concerned that he could transmit that not only to his children, but also to his wife, Audrey, who is still had still has a somewhat compromised immune system from toxic shock syndrome. So the reality is that this is more medical based. It's nothing to do with the schedule he would probably play if she hadn't dealt with this and gone through the near-death experience in 2015, just ahead of the Masters. So this becomes another guy that adds to the narrative of guys that aren't going to play, either because of Zika concerns, which I think are very valid. You've got to think about them, especially if you're planning to expand your family in the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months, because no one really knows for certain how long Zika remains in your bloodstream, remains in you, that you could transmit it to your wife in the course of trying to have intercourse to try to have a baby. The obvious effects of Zika are there in terms of birth defects. So that's certainly something that spooked players. But at this point, we've got Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, Vijay Singh, Charles Schwartzel, Miguel Angel Jimenez, along with Leishman, who have said they're not going to play. And some is schedule based, some is disinterest in Adam Scott's part. But you have an easy clincher with Zika for guys to say, you know, it's not worth it. No, thank you. I've got other things to do. We've got a truncated schedule this year. We've got two majors in a 3-week stretch. You've got the Open Championship at Royal Troon. You've got a week, and then you've got the PGA Championship at Baltusrol, and then you've got the Olympics a few weeks later, and then you've got the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then you've got the Ryder Cup if you're American or European. And all of a sudden, the calendar is extremely crowded. For Jordan Spieth, this is his last week off with last stretch basically of time off of more than 1 week until the end of the Ryder Cup. Same is true basically for Rory McIlroy. This week, defending at Wells Fargo, starts a stretch of three in a row. He defends this week in Charlotte. He will play the Players' Championship, and then he'll go over to Ireland at the K Club and host the Irish Open yet again. And he's going to continue to do that. So he's going to continue to have that host role moving forward. And the European Tour has scheduled the Irish Open and the BMW PGA Championship in back-to-back weeks in each of the last couple of years. And wouldn't you know, Rory McIlroy isn't all that interested in playing the BMW PGA Championship this year. And he made that announcement on Wednesday saying he would skip it. He didn't want to make it four in a row, in part because of the concentrated schedule, and in part because he also said he is going to play in the Olympics. So he's trying to take one tournament off the table. He's already won there. Wentworth is an absolute dud since it was redesigned by Arne Jels. People play it on the European Tour because it's got a huge purse relative to other European Tour events. And European Tour players who have moved their talents almost exclusively to the PGA Tour come back to it because it's a show of sign of support for the European Tour to play at Wentworth. Rory McIlroy does not have to do that. He's shown support for the European Tour consistently. Obviously, getting involved in the Irish Open to become the host of it is a huge sign of support. Deciding to play in the French Open, which is opposite the WGC Bridgestone Invitational this year, that is a huge sign of support to the European Tour. The European Tour decided not to co-sanction that event this year, the one in Akron, Ohio, because they wanted to support the French Open. They wanted to give the 100th French Open its due, and they've incentivized players to do that with extra Ryder Cup points, extra points for the Race to Dubai, things like that. So they've tried to get guys who would otherwise be eligible and otherwise would play in Akron, which is now in June this year. They're trying to get them to come over and play the French Open. Fine, makes sense. So it's not like Rory McIlroy isn't supporting the European Tour. That is not the narrative here. But rather, the narrative is that golf's decisions in trying to create an Olympic tournament, an Olympic presence, are doomed. They doomed the way that people perceive it, the way the players perceive it, the way fans perceive it, the way it might be received by the International Olympic Committee. It's almost like falling on its own sword. And while no major or no even likely woman who's going to play in the 60-player women's tournament the second week, the next week of the Olympics, has even made an utterance that they're not going to play because of Zika or for whatever other reason, you've got six guys. Five of or four of them are major champions. Two of them are former world's number one. Said no thanks, and they don't want to do it because of the schedule. They don't want to play two majors in 3 weeks and then go play an Olympic tournament and then go through the stretch. Many of these guys are PGA Tour players, of four tournaments in 5 weeks to play for the FedEx Cup. They just want a little break. I understand. I got it. A lot of these guys try to fit these things in June and July because they know August is pretty crazy because typically you play 3 out of 4 weeks, if not 4 to 5 weeks in that stretch in August because you've usually got Akron, you've usually got Firestone. You've got the PGA Championship the next week, so that's 2 in a row. Most everybody takes the next week off because Wyndham is the final event of the PGA Tour regular season, so unless you've got to be in it, if you're in the first two, you probably don't need to be in Wyndham, so you typically skip. And then you get right into the Barclays, which is going to become the Northern Trust, and then you start the playoff stretch, and you got 3 and 4 weeks there, 4 and 5 weeks there if you get all the way through. So that's a pretty bad stretch of golf, 6 tournaments in 8 weeks for a top player. And that's why they try to build in not bad tournaments in June and July, but places where guys can pick spots and feel comfortable and not have to play every stinking week because you've got a major. You usually have a WGC and one other big event in that month, and that kind of sets the guy's playing schedule. Same thing is happening with Jordan Spieth. He has skipped the Valero Texas Open this year, an event he played last year, nearly won, contended late before Jimmy Walker won, because of the schedule, because of the way the things are have been moved around. That's why he would typically play pretty much every Texas event. It's just what a Texan does. He's very loyal to the state. He's got a lot of business ties in the state. A lot of his sponsors are Texas-based. So he wants to appease them by playing in his home state. He would get a ton of crap if he didn't. I think people understood that he didn't play in the Valero Texas Open this year because of the schedule, because of the Olympics. But next year, if he doesn't, he's going to get crapped on again. So those are things to worry about. I haven't thought about too much about how other players have been affected by this. Jason Day is pretty much taking a relaxed approach to scheduling anyhow. I don't think the Olympics necessarily impacted that. Maybe you could see it through that prism, but I don't think they were affected by that. Adam Scott's played a pretty late schedule, though he decided to play more PGA Tour events early in the season so he could rack up some points and not feel so far behind the eight ball. And then he won twice in a row, so that problem has been eliminated. He just has to worry about his normal scheduling at this point for the rest of the year, dealing with his normal scheduling against the changed Olympic influence schedule. Ricky Fowler's schedule is pretty much the same. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's really all that different. And he's doesn't really have any reason to feel tired. I mean, he's rested and relaxed after a week at Baker's Bay in the Bahamas, and he's had a win this year. He won in Abu Dhabi. He nearly won in Phoenix. He should have beat Hideki Matsuyama in that playoff, but he didn't for the Phoenix Open. And there's no reason to believe that he's changing his schedule. But you've got these guys who have the luxury of deciding what events to play and not to play, have the luxury of deciding when they want to take an extra week off here and there. And they don't have to rely on money from inside the ropes because they got plenty outside of it. They're exempt. They're playing well. No problems there. So, they can bump off a schedule a little bit for this year so that they can go do the Olympics and then get back to normal for next year. But I think that the perception is being created that a lot of these guys are unhappy that they've got to still play their normal schedule, because we've still got 4 major championships. We've still got a FedEx Cup. We've still got a Ryder Cup if you're a European or an American. So you got to earn points for those things. You've still got the WGCs, which are free money. No one's turning down free money. And you've still got the Olympic tournament. So the PGA Tour and the European Tour got together and didn't say, okay, well, we'll strip out 3 tournaments this year and just create an Olympic break. We'll go dark for a few weeks. And I understand why that's the case, because for the fact that there are 60 guys playing in the Olympic tournament, and they go down to like 350th in the world on the men's side to get to that field, by the way, which is hideous. But nonetheless, you only have 60 guys in that field. You have more than 250 people who play regularly on the PGA Tour. This year alone, there are more than 360 people who have played in one PGA Tour event this year. So those are the people that have to be considered by the PGA Tour, and even so on the European Tour, not quite as deep the membership week to week, but there are a lot of players who come through a European Tour event and want a place to play, either because they're coming from the Challenge Tour, they got to fill up the event, either because there's an alignment with the Asian Tour, and so they've got the Asian Tour players and the European Tour players in a field. But those are the people that are thought about in this scheduling issue. And those are the people that get favored, because there are way more of them than superstars. So the PGA Tour and European Tour were willing to say, okay, for 1 year, we'll have some guys, some big names missing from certain events that maybe they'd normally play, but the hope is they'll come back next year and everyone will kind of understand that we're doing this for the Olympics. Now, the question is, what if the Olympic tournaments turn out to be duds? There's 72 holes of stroke play. Same crap we see every week. And Adam Scott said he's not even going to watch the Olympic golf because he doesn't want to watch another 72-hole tournament. So there's a combination of things here that just is making golf look bad for the Olympics. And then add in that the SI Anonymous Player Survey came out this week. It's an annual survey of, you know, people from PGA Tour, PGA Tour champions, LPGA Tour. And they polled PGA Tour guys, which would you rather win more? Would you rather win the PGA Championship or an Olympic gold medal? Pretty much everyone said the PGA. Would you rather win the Players Championship or an Olympic gold medal? Three quarters said the Players Championship. Would you rather win the Valero Texas Open or an Olympic gold medal? And it was at that point you were like, hey, okay. The gold medal is more valuable than a second-tier PGA Tour event. Got it. Third tier, depending on how you define your tiers. So that's where golf views an Olympic gold medal at this point. And Jason Day made a great point, made it very clear, and I think this is something everyone kind of understands, but no one's really saying, that this generation of golfers, actually every generation of golfer, the last four or five of them, all of them grew up with nothing to think about in terms of the Olympics. There was no Olympic dream. They worried about gold medals for golf because golf wasn't part of that. What they dreamed about was winning major championships. They dreamed about winning the Open, the U.S. Open, PGA, the Masters. That's what they want. Then they added in World Golf Championships and the Players Championship and the FedEx Cup. Those are the things these guys have been conditioned to care about. And now you introduce this once every four-year thing in an event that doesn't sound all that appetizing in a market in Rio, which is dealing with political unrest, an uncertain economy, environmental hazards, and is just dealing with Zika virus. So you've got four or five big things working against Brazil, and you go, hey, would you go down there and play the same boring event you play every week on a course you've never seen, you'll never see again, in a 60-man event for an Olympic gold medal, and if you defend it in 4 years' time, great, if not, whatever. I would value that very low compared to other things I do all the time, too. Makes sense. So Rory McIlroy has a point here. Golf's fighting a perception issue with itself. Hey, we wanted to get in the Olympics, but no one wants to play in the Olympics. So why did we go through all this fight? So there's some kind of mismatch between golf's governing bodies, which all form the International Golf Federation, which is kind of the official Olympic body for the sport in golf with the Olympics. And they all say, okay, we're gonna get in the Olympics. It's going to be great for the sport. It's going to grow. We're going to get on the Olympic stage. And all those things may or may not be true. And there are varying opinions, very strong ones, as to whether or not that's the case. But they made this calculation. They consulted with some players and said, what's the best format? And I don't think that they necessarily asked what was the most fun format. They asked the best, the one that got the biggest profile players on that stage. And that answer was a 60-person, 72-hole event that favored getting in the top 15 players overall else to make up a 25% of the field, and then staggering the field with fairly highly ranked players favoring geographical diversity so that you had a mix of really good players, pretty good players, and players who are representing countries who are just happy to be there. And the end result is that it seems boring, that the schedule doesn't prioritize the Olympics, it just fits it in by moving everything else around. And as a result, it looks like from everybody, including the leadership for the sport, that the Olympics aren't a priority. They're just there, and we got in, we got to accommodate it. So what has to happen immediately, and I mean immediately, after the Olympics in August, is golf needs to come out and say, in 2020, we're going to do this differently. If we're going to keep the same format, whatever, I hate it, but fine. If we've got to do that, fine. But there should be a team component. But if there's not a team component, if it's just individual again, golf needs to come out and say, in 2020, when the Olympics come to Tokyo, we are putting a pause on the golf calendar. We are not going to shift majors around. We're not going to co-sanction and unsanction and re-sanction events. we're going to say for 2 weeks, we're not doing anything. Maybe even 3 weeks, we're not doing anything. What I would do if I were the PGA Tour, I would go dark for 2 weeks. I would go dark the week before the Olympics. And maybe you have like an opposite field caliber event if you want to do that, fine. Then you have the Olympic tournament and you come back for normal stuff. If you're the LPGA, you go dark for 2 weeks, the week of the men's tournament and the week of the women's tournament. And then you come back and maybe even you float into Evian or something like that. So I think golf needs to make that commitment very clear to the International Olympic Committee. We talked about the format problems. I would come out immediately and change the format and get that recommended and passed through. And that's the steps we should take as a sport if we care about golf in the Olympics. And if we don't, if we just went through the exercise of getting golf in the Olympics to do it, then let's stop the facade and let's make it about something more interesting. Let's use our one other Olympics to make it about amateurs or teams or developing countries or whatever it is, but not what it is right now. And if we can do that, then I think we've achieved something if, as Rory McIlroy says, the legitimate fear comes true, of his at least, that golf won't be in the Olympics beyond 2020. So let's use that for the good that it is and see where we can go from there. As mentioned, Rory McIlroy is the defending champion this week at Wells Fargo. Won by 7 last year. He went out in 40 in his first 9 on Thursday morning, played the back 9 first, the tougher side, where the green miles 16, 17, and 18 are, I think, 5 times harder than the rest of the golf course in terms of scoring over the history of the event. So he could very well turn out to have an okay round, you know, 1-2 over par or something like that. But this is a really interesting week for Quail Hollow because there are a couple of really significant things happening not only to Quail Hollow, but also in North Carolina. So let's start with Quail Hollow itself. Like we said, it's going to host the 2017 PGA Championship. After this week, they're going to shut down the course and begin renovation. They're going to change the makeup of the golf course. They're going to get rid of the first hole as it's conceived and the second hole as it's conceived. So they're going to turn the first into a longer hole, the second hole, and like the fifth hole. They're going to combine, and they're going to reroute the golf course a little bit. You can see all the plans at golfnewsnet.com. It is an interesting plan, but they're going to make some of the early holes that don't really make a whole lot of sense more difficult for the PGA Championship. So it'll be a little bit different. It's not going to host... Quail Hollow will not host the Wells Fargo in 2017. Eagle Trace will, which is, I think, closer to Wilmington. But nonetheless, so that's the alternative host for 1 year while Quail Hollow is renovating and gets prepared to host the PGA Championship. And then you've got in the backdrop of what's happening in Charlotte and throughout the state of North Carolina with House Bill 2. And if you're not familiar, House Bill 2 is something that was rushed through the Republican-led legislature and signed by the Republican governor of North Carolina. And that bill effectively does two things. One, it prohibits municipalities underneath the state government in North Carolina, meaning cities, counties, etc., from creating and implementing non-discrimination laws on the basis of pretty much anything in the state. So that wipes void Charlotte, which is where Quail Hollow is, their non-discrimination law, which was designed to protect the LGBT community so that they could host the 2017 NBA All-Star Game and not feel like they were an unwelcoming community to the folks that were coming in, that would be pouring in for that weekend next year. The other part of the bill, among many issues, is that House Bill 2 prohibits folks from the transgender community from using the bathroom of the gender that they identify, but rather they are forced to use bathrooms with their natural sex organs as they were delivered at birth. So if you're transgender and you identify as a woman, if you have a penis, you are required in North Carolina to use the men's bathroom. There is an argument about that. I don't think that there should be an argument about that, but this is a conservative sport, fine. We reached out to the PGA of America and the PGA Tour when this bill was passed, and they basically said in their comments to us, we want to promote diverse communities, but we're not going to do anything about this. And I don't know that we're going to get much pushback about that this week from either journalists or from the people who are attending the tournaments or protesters. I don't expect any of that to happen. But the thing I wanted to talk about is that golf finds itself often complicit in allowing things to go on that shouldn't. And we keep doing this. We did it with Shoal Creek, did it with Augusta National, and those are private clubs. And I'm not even bashing you can get into the private club, it's their right to do things argument. You can get into the argument that they clubs that host big events like this set an example and they should treat people a little bit differently. That's a complicated gray argument. I don't want to get into that. But when you get into an argument about things about what Donald Trump has said, the way he has carried himself.
And now at this point, Trump has landed the Republican nomination, well, effectively landed the Republican nomination for president. We're going to have a six-month drawn-out fight with Hillary Clinton. We're going to hear all kinds of nasty things spewed, potentially more offensive things, potentially more things that are represented between what Trump says and the sport of golf, because Doral hosts a WGC event, although pending a new sponsor, that could change. Golf kind of just sits back and twiddles their thumbs and tries not to get involved. They just want things to play out on their own. And that kind of flies in the face of the growing number of corporate, athletic, celebrity activists who aren't afraid to say what they think and support something. Now, in most of those cases, those athletes, celebrities, or corporate businesses are either headed or are actually people who with a liberal view of the world, that their view of more freedom is to let more people do more things and to not inhibit their ability to love, to travel, to work, to all these things. And they're more social in nature. They're more about freedoms given to people who have been slighted repeatedly and purposefully in the past. But golf doesn't really talk about that a whole lot. And I think that is also part of the reason why golf struggles to attract young people. And this may be a little bit of a tangent, but let's try this for a couple of minutes. This is a conservative sport. I will raise both my hands and tell you I am a fairly liberal person in a conservative sense, in that I believe in the concept of freedom that conservatives kind of put out there, but I believe in freedom in the liberal way, in that you need opportunities, you need a baseline. It's just kind of a different way of viewing freedom, I suppose. But we agree on that. But the problem is when conservatives, and conservative by kind of association with the sport of golf, when conservatives say things that upset liberals, guess who you're upsetting by and large? Kids. Kids think liberally. Whether they evolve into a conservative way of thinking or they evolve into a more liberal way of thinking as they grow, you're offending children. You're offending kids who are like, wait, dweebs and losers play golf. And it only reinforces that when the sport, not purposefully, but incidentally, defends the status quo, the things that are unfair or perceived as unfair, that aren't working, that could be done better, that are offensive, that are holding us back, whatever you want to think about it. And then you ask a kid to play golf and show up at a place where there are a whole lot of rich white guys, and that doesn't sound so appealing. Do you get where that's coming from? I'm not making a total leap here because I can't say there's any causal relationship there. But that has to play a little bit into the culture of the sport, that when golf is unwilling to take a stand against people and things that don't make sense, that stand in the way of progress or want to revert away from the progress that we've made in ways that no one can really be against, then I think golf is shooting itself in the foot. So why doesn't it take a stand and say, okay, well, House Bill 2 is stupid. It should be, it should never have been signed into law in the first place. It should be vetoed or turned over or whatever term you want to use. And that should be it. And we'll keep playing the tournament here, but we're going to take donations from the state and move it to communities that are impacted by this law in North Carolina or something like that. I don't know. But make a stand about it. You don't necessarily have to cancel the event. There's a lot of money that goes into this. There's obviously a corporate backing from Wells Fargo. There's a lot of logistics. With a major championship, there are a lot of logistics. Unless you're Oakmont, you can't just host a major on the fly. So I understand those things. But it's okay to be an activist. It's okay in this culture, in the 21st century of America, either as a corporate entity or as an individual with some clout, to take a stand and believe some things. And it's okay if you're conservative. There's nothing wrong with that. If you believe that, stand up for it. And if it hurts you, okay. And I hope that golfers wouldn't come out and say, well, this is the way it should be. You know, you should, if you, you should use the, your natural organs and all that stuff. I don't believe that. I think that would hurt the sport. But I get the sense that golf is a safe bet for corporate America because golfers don't make bets except on the course. They don't make bets in their opinions. They keep them to themselves. And I don't know if that necessarily works in this culture with youth. Just what I'm saying. Just a thought. Anyway, next week on the show, we will talk about the Wells Fargo Championship. We will get you ready for the Players Championship. We'll see if we have a buyer for TaylorMade Adidas Golf. Again, you can listen to the Gear Effects podcast on iTunes as well as on golfnewsnet.com to hear more about that. And we'll try to get a guest to talk about TPC Sawgrass. Please give us a 5-star review if you listen to us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. If you use Google Play or Google Play Music, give that a look. You can find the 19th Hole Golf Show there. Or simply cut out the middleman and download the GNN app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can listen to our podcasts first before anybody else. As soon as our feeds are updated with our audio, you'll get a notification or you'll be able to listen to it right away. So please download the GNN radio app and let us know what you think about it. Until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.